Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. Today, my guest is Melissa Houston from Quebec. She is the founder of the Fractional CFO Agency. She is a columnist at Forbes.com and a host of the Business Society podcast. A licensed, chartered professional accountant, she's a financial strategist for CEOs, and she helps successful business owners increase their profit margins without having to increase revenues so they can keep more money in their pocket while increasing their personal wealth. Melissa is passionate about helping business owners go from six-figure to seven-figure businesses and achieving their personal financial dreams. Melissa, welcome to the show today.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here. Quick correction, though, being Canadian, I'm actually not from Quebec. That's where our cottage is. I live in Ontario, so I live in the capital of Canada, which is Ottawa.
Wow. Okay, so, I'll have to work on my geography afterwards, having never been in the area at all. So
it's That's quite okay.
It's all French to me. So listen, like, you've been doing this for a pretty long time, helping people, and you have your own personal story that really is quite empowering, it sounds like. It's defined you a little bit, and then you've had to redefine yourself from your experience. So can you share with us a little bit about what your story is? Because I think stories really matter to people. People, when they tap into their why, become so much more engaged and infused with energy. And so tell us a little about your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had been working as a CPA in the corporate world for over 20 years. And I would say about 15 years ago, I really, really knew that I wanted to go into business for myself, but I kind of put it on hold, especially being a mom. You know, the kids were young, you know, there's financial obligations. I was in a great job. I shouldn't have had any reason to complain. I figured, you know, I should just suck it up and do my job and enjoy the paycheck that's coming in and such. But in doing that, you know, hindsight is always 20/20, right? I learned this the hard way. In doing that, I kind of lost myself about 6 years ago, where, you know, I could feel myself not being really happy. And I wasn't really sure why, but I wasn't really looking inwards. What I started to do was I started to spend money. I was spending money to feel good about myself. I was spending money to, you know, on nicer clothes and, you know, makeup and whatever. And it snowballed and got progressively higher spending. And it was making me feel good on the surface. But being an accountant and knowing that, you know, this frivolous spending was putting myself into debt because I was definitely spending more money than I was bringing in at the time. You know, I knew the warning signs, I knew they were there, but I continued. And what ended up happening is I managed to dig a hole of about $100,000 worth of debt within a year. And because I knew it was wrong, I was hiding a lot of that from my husband. And when, you know, crap hit the fan, so to speak, and I got caught and I had to come clean, the look of disappointment on his face was just too much to handle. And I knew at that point, I really had to understand why I did this, because even though I knew I was doing it and I allowed myself to do it, I never really understood why, because I'm an accountant, I know better, I should have done better. So going through that journey of self-discovery, I realized that by suppressing my need to get out there and do the work that I really felt called to do, because I was suppressing that and I was trying to ignore that, it was coming through in like bad behaviors, making choices that were not good for me. And of course, like I said, hindsight is 20/20. If I'd known then what I know now, I never would have allowed that to happen. And I definitely would have taken steps to start my business much earlier. But in learning that, that allowed me to get to the point where I was ready to start my business, be true to myself, and go for my dreams.
Wow. So, you know, I think a lot of business owners, entrepreneurs, people in general, get themselves into debt and maybe define themselves by the debt and don't know how to get out of the mindset that got them there. So what did you learn? What can you share with people about the debt mindset and how to reset that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a journey, right? And it's certainly not a one-size-fits-all type of response. But my personal experience was in learning, peeling back the layers and learning and understanding why it was so important to me to live my life on my terms, really allowed to break free of that debt cycle, right? I started recognizing the trigger points that would want me to get online and start shopping and spending money and, you know, just kind of looking for that escape from my real life, right? So once I started recognizing those trigger points, you know, I would turn it into a proactive state where I'm like, now I'm working on building my business. You know, I was putting that energy into serving something that was a true need of mine, right? And as I continued to do that, I can honestly tell you today, I don't have those feelings of escapism, right? I don't need to escape my life because I feel like I'm doing what I should be doing. And it just brings me so much joy. And getting from that place of, you know, being okay to be in debt, it really wasn't even about the debt. It was about, like, you know, some people look at food as a comfort, which, you know, I can admit I do too as well, but, you know, alcohol, drugs, sex, whatever, we all have our vices, right? And for me, it was just that self-sabotage of racking up that debt and knowing that it's going to put my husband and I's financial plans behind a bit because of the incredible amount of debt that I put us ourselves in.
Yeah, I think you point to the importance of emotional and spiritual fitness. I'll throw physical fitness in there as well. That seems to go well with it. But the importance of having the trifecta of those three things together so that you're staying in touch with your feelings. You're not self-sabotaging. You're not turning to alcohol. You're not turning to food. These are really important things, or your default isn't like an emotional default, like to anger or sadness or whatever that is. So, so important that we work on ourselves personally to be able to grow our businesses. If we aren't growing ourselves personally, then it's really difficult to grow our businesses. And so let's talk about growing our businesses, because, you know, here I am. I've been a growth coach for 15 years, actually 2004, 17 years, a small business consultant helping people grow for 13 years before that. So 30 plus years experience. And I've never really built a large consulting practice. But what growth for me has been about is improving the quality of my life and my lifestyle. And so I know that you and I are really in sync, and all business owners should be, around like the difference between revenue and profitability. And in my business, we say revenue is vanity, profitability is sanity, and cash is king. So like, you can have a really successful business and make really good money and be really fulfilled at much lower levels of revenue volume than you think.
So absolutely.
I know that this is something you talk to your clients about, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, and I love your saying about revenue is the vanity numbers, because it's mm-hmm. so true. A lot of people are defining their success through how much revenue they're bringing in. But the reality is, if you're not profitable, then, you know, that's a red flag for your business. And bringing in those high amounts of revenue, there's going to be a trade-off of, you know, time spent in your business and such. Keeping your business smaller. I mean, if you look at small business owner who maybe is making, like, let's just say, I'm going to throw out a number there, $300,000 a year, and their profit margins are really high even after they've paid themselves, and they're still pulling in $150,000 of profit every year.
Right.
If you've got a seven-figure business that's not even making $150,000 of profit,
right,
which, believe me, happens quite
all
often,
the time. Yep.
All the time.
Yep.
Who's better off, right?
You've exactly.
got the smaller business owner who's got more freedom in their life and still making a decent amount of profit, versus the one who's traded off their life to bring in these big revenue numbers, but, you know, really not having a lot of profit to show for it.
Yeah. I want to also note a distinction here that I think is really important, because I have found that some business owners will come to me and say, yeah, I've got a $40 million business or a $20 million business. And then I look at their business and I realize that like 80% of what their revenues are just passing straight through their costs of goods, their materials, their labor. I mean, a good example is an advertising agency that collects 100% of the fee, but spends 85% of it on things like billboards, radio, television, whatever materials go into that. And so they only keep 15%. So a $40 million ad agency may only be a $6 million business, or, mm-hmm. you know, a real estate business that is managing, buying and selling properties and has $200 million in properties may only be an $8 million a year company. So I like for people to think in terms of, what is your gross profit? Because mm-hmm. that is really the size of your business.
Exactly.
You know, and that's after materials and that's after variable labor. So I think that's an important distinction.
Absolutely. Because people think, oh, $8 million, that's a huge profit. Why wouldn't that be great? Well, it's not great if it's only a 5% profit margin, right?
So super important for people to really distinguish between revenue, profitability. Do you find that you work with a lot of companies that also have difficulty with cash management,
yes.
small companies?
Yes.
And they you know, tell us a little bit about what your experience is in this area.
Absolutely. Quite often, business owners think that if they're short on cash, that what they need to do is go out there and make more offers and make more sales and fill up their cash, the cash coming in, right? And that's not necessarily the best way to deal with it, right? Because your cash balance in your bank account is not what the profit is. So you need to have a look inside, like what I say, look under the hood type of speak in your business, look under the hood and see what's going on with your revenue and your expenses. If you've got, you know, runaway expenses that you're not looking at and you're not monitoring, those are huge money leaks that are happening in your business where you can tighten those up. I mean, the expression of you can't fill a leaky bucket, mm-hmm. it applies to business. If you're just going out there to generate cash and hope that that's going to solve your cash flow problem, you need to understand that, you know, that analogy, you can't fill a leaky bucket. So if you've got leaks in your business that you haven't you know, looked at, checked up on, and filled, then bringing in cash is just going to leak right out of your business. So having that understanding that your cash flow and your profit levels are completely different, and monitoring your profit and knowing and planning your, having a cash flow management system in place where you are projecting 6 to 8 weeks in advance of what's coming in and out of your business so that you can protect yourself from cash shortages and you can manage that cash flow and make sure your customers are paying on time and ensure that you're paying your bills on time and you're not getting hit with, you know, late fee payments or what have you, because they sound very small, you know, on an individual level, but it all adds up.
So let's actually talk about that, because I used to do a lot of this work in my early years when I was doing consulting, but I don't find a lot of people even understand how to do cash flow planning.
Yeah.
Do you have some tips or tricks for people that you
recommend? Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely one of the lessons I teach in my programs, because it's so important. Like, let me just emphasize that 82% of businesses fail due to financial mismanagement. And the number one financial mismanager is the cash flow. Mm-hmm. So cash is the lifeline of the business. So, I mean, you have accounting software now that's so sophisticated that you can actually have a pre-programmed report that you can run and it'll spit out, you know, your cash flow for the next 6 to 8 weeks, mm-hmm. or however long you've programmed it. But if you're old school, or if you don't have that function, if you're using, you know, I don't know, a free software or whatever, you can do this in an Excel sheet, like, and manage, you know, you're going to plan out what you're expecting coming in. And this is good for small businesses that don't have a lot of transactions or high ticket, or they have high ticket items going through in and out. So it's relatively easy to track. And you just, you know, like right now, let's say, you know, from December 17th onwards, you know, you're going to start with your cash balance. And then, you know, you look at your reports, you run your AP reports and your AR reports, and you see what's coming in and what's going out and the dates and stuff. And cash flow is a lot of a timing issue, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have an issue where you're expecting a huge payment, but you also have a huge bill coming out, but the huge bill needs to be paid before the big payment comes in, you need to make sure that you've got plan B in place, right, to cover you. So whether that's through a line of credit or a cash reserve that you've saved up, I highly recommend a cash reserve, but for some startups, that's not possible immediately. And another tip that I'd love to give listeners is, if you're in the position right now where things are going well, this is the time to apply for that line of credit when you don't need it. Right? Because mm-hmm. when you do need it, chances are that banks are not going to approve it. So get your systems in place so that if you don't have that cash reserve, you've got that line of credit that you can rely on to float you through the period where you're a little cash short. So having those plans in place relieves a lot of stress and ensures that you're not going to run into financial difficulties.
Yeah, so one of my mentors in this area talks about a core capital target, and that's a target for around how much cash you should have on hand. Mm-hmm. And excuse me, his number is, generally speaking, says works out to about 2, maybe 2.5 times your operating expenses.
For how long?
You know, for so like 2 months worth of. Two and a half months worth of operating expenses.
Yeah, to float you through.
Yeah, which seems to be a pretty magic number for a lot of my clients' businesses. Maybe they're, you know, standard operating margins, but I think I question how good a job the software can do at spitting out a cash flow report.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely issues with human error for entry and getting dates reversed and all sorts of stuff, which mm-hmm. is why I like to do the manual, because you have a really good understanding yeah. of what's going on. But I mean, you have to choose your preference, right?
Yeah.
And as far as like the 2.5 multiplier there. Mm-hmm. I would say 3 to 6 months of covering those expenses for a cash reserve is probably more, well, it's probably safer.
But is it realistic for a lot of small businesses?
Not likely. No, yeah, not likely. Yeah, but that's what I find. It's definitely a goal that should be, you know, continually worked at.
Should I include my line of credit that's available as part of my cash reserves?
I would not.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I would not either. But I could see getting to 3 to 6 months if I included my line of credit.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be too tough.
No.
So let's shift gears a little bit to talk about personal financial management, because it's so intertwined with company financial management, especially for small businesses, where, like, if you're and, you know, back to your story earlier, like, if you're overspending personally, it's going to be really difficult for the business to be a continuing operation. I have a client, one in particular, where the owner, the founder, is older and is taking too much money out of the business on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. And it's putting a drain on the business. And it's because he hasn't done his personal financial budgeting. So are you seeing this a lot with the smaller business owners?
Absolutely. And one of the first things we do when we create that financial plan for your business is include that personal budget, because you need to understand how much money you need to make in order to pay yourself personally. So that is definitely one of the first steps. Mm-hmm. And not to over leverage your personal accounts to finance your business, right? I see that a lot. And you have to be very careful, because, you know, growing your business too quickly puts a strain. If you're using yourself as an individual to fund your business and keep it going, that's going to put a strain on your personal finances, right? Mm-hmm. So when I work with clients, I always take into account the personal and the business finance, both as a whole. And I always educate my clients in, you know, teaching them that your business is going to likely be, if you manage this correctly, your largest financial asset. So if you're growing your business and the wealth in your business, you're increasing your net worth. And, you know, we talk about how it all plays in together.
So how do we get business owners and how do we get accountants to be more forward-looking and less historians just doing, you know, tax preparation and returns and giving some people, you know, a pat on the back? How do we
yeah.
This is a challenge, I think, for both your profession and mine, is getting business owners to be more forward-looking and asking questions.
Yeah. And, you know, I always find that comment rather interesting, because, you know, as an accountant, as a CPA myself, I am a financial strategist. Mm-hmm. So I am continually helping my clients plan ahead, look forward. Yes, historical data is valuable, but it's not the be all end all, right? You need to be looking forward, planning, giving your business a goal and direction and a roadmap. And that can be achieved through, you know, operating forecasts and such. The thing that I find people often misunderstand is the difference between a financial strategist CPA and a tax accountant CPA, right? Mm-hmm. And so not all accountants are created equally. And you will never find me sitting behind a desk doing tax returns, because to me, you might as well kill me slowly. That is not something that interests me.
Right.
But what I get really jazzed up about is doing those financial plans. Like, that is where my sweet spot is, and showing business owners where it's possible to take your business. So to me, I don't really resonate with that comment that you made, because I'm so forward-looking. I don't think about a lot of past data.
But your colleagues, many of them are past-looking. They're historians. And I don't mean your colleagues, the people that you work or surround yourself with. I mean the CPA society, the multitude of tax preparers. I always found it was someone who stood out from the crowd who did more planning, more thinking, more let's create your forecast and let's make and define your future. Let's mm-hmm. define 2022 now and let's say what it's going to look like. You know, mm-hmm. of course, we can't predict a pandemic, an endemic, whatever. I mean, but let's plan it to the best of our ability.
Yeah. And I think that people just need to be aware of what they're looking for and what an accountant can provide them, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I try to educate people as much as I can by talking about future thinking and creating that financial plan and how it's mandatory and such. I mean, the past thinking is very applicable to when you're doing audits and when you're doing tax returns. But I completely understand your point about being forward thinking. I think it has a lot to do with the individual that you're choosing to work with.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about scaling. That's a subject I think both of us are interested in.
Yep.
And helping companies scale. So mm-hmm. let's talk about some of your tips for scaling. Can you share yeah. some of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. Because I always caution that all growth is not a good thing, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that, oh, I'm growing the business quickly, the money's coming in, everything's great. But if you're not managing that growth carefully, it could put you in a financial position where you've mismanaged your finances, especially for product-based businesses. Service-based, it's not as difficult, but you're also remembering that you're putting a strain on resources when you're growing as well. So having that plan of growth and projecting what those growth numbers are going to look like and ensuring that your profit margins stay tight as your profit grows, that is really important to monitor. So this is what I like to focus on when I'm helping my businesses grow and scale, is to make sure that as the revenue is projected, the expenses are growing with them, because you can't forget that, you know, it's going to increase your costs, and making sure that your profit margin either stays the same or it increases over time, but you definitely don't want it to decrease.
Yeah. Gross profit margin is a challenging thing for clients to manage. Mm-hmm. I've seen it certainly with the growing companies, but I've also seen it with companies that are not growing, mm-hmm. that are just doing the same level of volume they did 6 months or a year ago, but they don't start to recognize that their labor costs have creeped, their material costs have gone up, they yeah. haven't made adjustments in their pricing, they're taking the pricing leads from their sales people who are saying, you know, hey, we can't price this any higher. But meanwhile, material costs are going up. And then the gross profit margin erodes over time.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing to manage. And it really needs to be managed very carefully.
It does. And it's such an important KPI to monitor.
Yeah. Do you have any ways that you help your clients or things that you recommend that they mm-hmm. do to track the gross profit margin on a regular basis?
Absolutely. Every month, look at your financial statements, monitor your KPIs. When I work with clients, either as a one-on-one coaching or as the fractional CFO service, mm-hmm. this is what we're doing each and every month. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. If you sign up with me to work with me, you cannot get away from this. This is part of the deal,
right,
where we sit down together and we monitor those numbers so that if they start to dip, you get alerted early, right? Because yep. if you're not looking at your financials every month and you let this go for 9 months or so, that's a money leak. And that can be a huge money leak depending on your revenue numbers, right?
Yes.
So it's important to look at your financials every month and see what's going on.
Yeah. I think even that it's even super important if you're to have leading indicators so that even before it gets to the financial statement, you can see what's going on. Mm-hmm. A number of my clients are in the construction industry, so they're doing project related work. So let's just take a house, for instance, that they're building. Maybe they're doing the landscape installation. Maybe it's a very large job. Maybe it's a $300,000 or a $500,000 installation job, and it's taking place over 3, 4, 5, 6 months. And they don't have really good gross profit margin monitors while the project's going on. They need to be able to know where they're at against their estimate and have some leading indicators as to how they're doing along the way, which makes it even more challenging.
Absolutely. And those are lower profit margins. And there's so many moving parts in construction. I mean, you would have to look at those financial reports and KPIs way more frequently than on a monthly basis. Like you have to be monitoring those numbers closely, because when you start deviating, that's when you want to tighten it up.
Yep. So who does all this? Supposing you don't have really good in-house financial talent, and supposing you don't really know like really good outside financial talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you need a combination of both. What are your recommendations for best practices here?
Yeah, my best practice is you engage with CFOs, right? The high level growth strategy people that understand how important it is to monitor these things. And I understand that a lot of businesses, especially small, medium-sized businesses, you don't have the budget to bring in a full-time CFO. They're expensive. And that's why fractional CFOs and, you know, fractional C-suite people have exploded in the industry lately, because we've recognized the need for smaller businesses to have access to this important information, but not on a full-time basis, right? Yep. So fractional CFOs mean that you're hiring that expertise that you would get from any full-time CFO, but you're hiring them on a part-time basis, on a retainer basis. So they're accessible to you. And, you know, depending on the agreement that you've worked out, you know, you set your terms of agreement for working together, and you can, you know, be in regular contact with them throughout the month.
Yeah, and fractional CFOs do come in so many different, I don't know what you want to call it, levels of expense, and mm-hmm. also like corresponding levels of need. So in other words, I'll go back to like the first CFO for rent that I ever knew was someone that I placed into a small publicly traded company. It was a pink sheets company that was doing all of $6 million a year. It was in the blood collection and platelet separation business. It was early AIDS research. And I put a CFO who had public accounting experience and had worked in public companies. And yet this was a small business. That's a very different need than someone who's running a $1 million company, or someone who's running a 20 going on, you know, $50 million business. How mm-hmm. do we look at the different CFOs, fractional CFOs, and understand the fit? Like, what are some suggestions you
have? That's a really, really good question. And what I would recommend to people is, first of all, when you're looking for somebody, look for qualifications and look for experience, right? So I would always recommend that they would be professionally accredited, and then look for the experience that you're looking for your own business, right? So if you're in that blood and platelet industry, try to find someone who, has experience in that industry as well. Mm-hmm. Look for referrals from your network. Look for people who have worked with you or worked with your colleagues. And another thing that I really like to emphasize is when you're working with a fractional CFO, they're a member of your team. So make sure that you've got a good rapport with them, because as a business owner, as the CEO of your business, you need that person to work with you and be aligned with your goals and ensure that you're getting the best possible value from your dollar and the best possible advice that aligns with your vision.
So should I let my fractional CFO hire my in-house finance person, or?
Absolutely, because they know what to look for your staffing requirements, right? Like your fractional CFO is the highest finance person within your business. Mm-hmm. So they're there to oversee what's going on in the finance department, plus offer you that value.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, except most times someone already has someone in-house doing mm-hmm. some of the financial stuff. And this yep. is where I think it becomes challenging.
Well, it's going to be challenging, but the CFO is overlooking it, right? So if it's a situation that's just not going to work, then unfortunately, you'd have to separate them from the situation and hire new, bring in somebody new that's going to be a better fit.
Exactly. All right. Melissa, any closing thoughts as we wrap this up today?
No, I think this has been a great conversation.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So Melissa Houston, you can connect with her on her website, through her email, through her social media accounts. All those will be in the show notes. Melissa Houston, CPA, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun talking with you.
Okay, fantastic. And folks, if you like this, share it, tell others about it, and stay tuned for more episodes.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.